Route 616, your home for all Finns Marvel main continuity. Welcome back. This is episode 51. I am here with Bill.
Hey, how's it going? I hope you hate yourself as much as we do, because this is a rough one.
We are totally excited to film this episode of Route 616, where we have all Fantastic Comics this week to cover.
And Nick Fury. I mean, if we're going to lie to them, we might as well go full in on the lies.
Yeah. So this week is a load of shit, as we're going to cover the last three Human Torch stories in Strange Tales. Then we're going to get something good and get our first Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. story in another Strange Tales issue. Then we're going to get a Tales of Suspense issue, where we will get a Captain America and Iron Man story, which one of those is okay, one of those not as much.
You want to know how to make these somewhat enjoyable? Read 11 straight issues of Jack Kirby, unedited, writing Captain America. Then come back to these. You know how he had super strength? Yeah, fuck that. Jack didn't invent it, so it's just gone again.
I'm starting to think...
bitter, though.
I'm starting to think you might be a little bitter.
No, the thing I'm bitter about is that I still have 4 left.
Ouch. Oh, shit.
And they have lower ratings than the ones I've already read.
Oh, God. How does it get worse? No. I guess
because
you'll find out.
Jack no longer even has an overarching plot that he's ignoring. He's just doing random things that might possibly be racist because he's handling race relations with the Falcon about as subtle as a boot to the chest.
Oh, nice. Oh. As you can see, by the way, we didn't even make fun or tease him this week, but Dan is not with us again. He is busy boy working.
We're just bitter because Dan got to avoid these comics.
Yeah, pretty much. And we will hopefully see him return next week, but we'll see what happens. Also, we are, if you haven't checked out our gaming videos that / streams that we've done so far, we've done a episode on the original Bioshock game, well, the remastered version of it at least. And then we have started a series in Total Extreme Wrestling 2020, which is a wrestling book and game.
So, yeah, you might recognize us from that, because apparently that's what people actually watch on our channel.
Yeah, that's gotten the most views on our channel. So that is, we're planning to hopefully do a part 2 today, so we'll see about that. So stay tuned for that. But we are continuing as a series for sure. There might in the future be another series in that game, but we'll see what happens. So, yeah. Anyways, I guess we can get into the comics now, get these fucking fins out of the way. So, let's start off with Strange Tales number 132A story, which is titled The Sinister Space Trap. And this one is, of course, written by Stan Lee. Well, actually, it's written by Larry, technically, in the comic it said, and then Stan was the editor, but it also gives Stan the right credit here.
Stan gets credit because he came up with the basic plot and then gave it to Larry to script it.
Yeah. Bob Powell and Steve Ditko on art, apparently. Steve Ditko, didn't he just
Steve
do the
Ditko
second story?
Steve Ditko did Doctor Strange, and they made a mistake adding it. This is just Bob Powell art.
I was going to say, this was definitely just Bob Powell art. It would have been much better if Steve Ditko wasn't
Someone copied involved. And pasted. That actually might be why Stan's showing up in the writing credit, too, because it looks like for this one, someone just copy-pasted off the Marvel Wiki page, and that includes both stories.
Yeah. This is inked by Mike Esposito.
And he does not work well with Bob.
Yeah. No. No. Mike has a pretty good rep, but...
Mike is a good inker, but he's not good enough to hide Bob's shortcomings. And so the art is real ugly on this one.
It is. Cover art done by Jack Kirby. Which, you know what, isn't even that much better than the interiors.
I think they're lying.
Oh.
I know they credit Kirby.
Yeah.
But that's a fucking Powell thing.
Yeah, I know. I was just looking at the fin. I'm like, is that truly
Kirby?
Kirby
textures him more. There's some like shadows like Kirby does. But that's 90% Powell. I bet Powell drew this and Kirby added some quick inks.
Probably. This is lettered by Sam Rosen. It says and Artie Simic, but that he might be on the second story too.
Yeah, Artie's on the second story.
And then this is a February 1965 release date. This is a 12-page story, and I will take this one away. and hopefully pretty fast. It will be, because it's only a paragraph. So, the Fantastic Four are asked to help out with a new space capsule when Johnny volunteers to pilot it. They are warned that one of the agency's scientists, Professor Jack, is considered a security risk. While Johnny is in space, Professor Jack captures Finn and informs Johnny that he used slow-working acid on various parts of this capsule. When the capsule breaks apart, Johnny allows himself to fall into Earth's atmosphere far enough to save himself from his flame powers and saves Finn. So that was really brief.
Okay, there's some... As much as I'm remiss to talk about this any longer than we have to, because I really didn't like this story, there's some pretty important context missing from this.
Yeah, like the fact that... So, Johnny's undercover. And
Thing's not allowed to go with him because he's too obvious.
But Finn ends up going because he's wanting an excuse to go anyway. Then Doris had broken up with Johnny, but then she changed her mind. So Thing goes to tell him, then Johnny's almost killed by Professor Jack.
Thing shows up in a truck disguised as a workman.
Yeah.
And
Professor Jack seemingly doesn't recognize them, but it turns out he was just pretending, and he does recognize the Thing. Although I think he still didn't recognize Johnny at one point, but then he does.
I don't know if it's bad writing on Larry's part, or if they're trying to be subtle. Given the quality of this story, I'm inclined to say bad writing.
Yeah.
Because he seemed to be fully fooled for a while, and then all of a sudden he just knows Johnny is the Torch.
Yeah.
And that's a thing I find a lot with Silver Age writers. That as soon as one person in the story knows something, everyone in the story knows it.
It's kind of like... It almost felt like reading it, they were like, oh, this looks really dumb if he doesn't know who they are.
Yeah. Well, I've been catching Jack doing it a lot, because Jack's writing never got out of the 60s, where, like, one person will figure something out, and then in a different room, a villain that was there will just all of a sudden know what happened. And so I think it's just a 60s trope that they just don't bother conveying that information has been shared, and they just assume since you know it, everyone can know it now.
Yeah. So I think we covered that enough.
Yeah, there's not a lot really interesting to say about this other than just continuing to bash it.
You know what, though? I actually didn't hate this one. I let this one have 2 stars.
I also gave this one 2 stars because as bad as it is, they're nailing the characterization with Johnny and the Thing, finally.
Yeah.
I was hoping Doris actually broke up with him for a little while, because she deserves better.
Yeah, that popped me. I was really very disappointed in her when she went to the Finn.
It was worse for me, because I remembered what the story of the next issue was, and so I assumed they were just going to forget that she had dumped them and they were just going to be back together again next issue, so I was kind of disappointed that it was closed off, because I was already starting to get geared up to mock that.
Shit.
This was fine. It was a comic that I read, and I hated it, but, like, objectively, it's not as bad as I felt about it. It just did a lot of things that I personally don't want from comics.
I didn't even hate it subjectively. This is pretty much what I expect from this title, really. So, I don't know. It could have been worse. I've read worse from this title.
I have definitely read worse from this and Giant Man.
Yeah. So, the squeeze is a 2. Anyways, I guess we'll move on to the next shitty Strange Tales. Which is issue 133, the A story, which is titled The Terrible Toys. Stan Lee writing this bad boy, Bob Powell on art. Thank God, yay. Inks by Mike Esposito. Cover art by Jack Kirby. Sam Rosen on letters. March 1965 release date, 12-page story. And I will take this one as well, and at least Finn looks more Finn-like on this cover.
This one was actually a Kirby cover.
Yeah.
That's why I say the last one was a Powell cover, because here he actually looks like a Kirby Thing.
At least, this synopsis is also very short, so let's see if we have to fill anything out on this one, but...
We probably will.
We probably will. While out shopping with with the Doris and Alicia. the English here is...
You know, they were originally going to say the girls, and then realized that we probably don't know who they were, so they changed the names and missed the.
Yeah, they have the, and then they spell Alicia around too. It's really good. Well, they're chopping with Doris and Alicia. The Human Torch and the Finn accidentally stumble upon the Puppet Master, in brackets, who has altered his appearance with plastic surgery, which we'll talk about more.
I actually want to talk about this now, because it's hilarious, and it comes up in the story. So it's not like I'm bringing in something extra at the end. The reason he has altered his appearance with plastic surgery is Bob Powell was so bad at drawing the Puppet Master that Stan Lee had to come up with an excuse and write it into the story to explain why he doesn't look like the Puppet Master.
It's so fucking weird how the whole thing goes, too, because he comes up with the explanation because his face is different enough. I mean, he's still bald and has the same look, but, like,
he looks like a normal person. His eyes are the right size. His head isn't weird proportions.
But then they have the explanation, but then they throw him into the story like it was the plan. Like, he writes the story like it was the plan because he's not recognized when he goes up to them originally, and all this shit is, it's very weird, the whole thing.
I think, honestly, what happened is that Bob Powell probably didn't read back issues. And so he probably didn't know how fucking weird he was. Because if he looked the way Bob Powell drew him... Yeah, there's a good chance, even if you had seen him before a couple of years ago, because at this point, we're still on real time.
Yeah.
So if you had seen him a couple of times a few years ago... There's a good chance that the only person who could recognize him is blind.
Yeah.
And so that makes sense if Bob Powell doesn't know what he looks like. And the Marvel method would hold up for that, because Stan comes up with a basic outline, then he gives it to Bob, and Bob draws everything, and then Stan comes in, puts in dialogue to make it make sense. And so Stan probably had this idea that they meet the Puppet Master at the store... And then they fight with him. And, that's a spoiler. And then, Bob drew this thing with this normal-looking Puppet Master actively interacting with them. And Stan's like, oh shit, I got a cover for this.
Yeah. The whole thing's just pretty wild. But that just goes to show how bad Bob Powell's art is. But anyways, Puppet Master's latest plot is using a ray gun to turn people into living mannequins. Captured by the Puppet Master and his robots, the two heroes manage to break themselves free, and in the end, the Puppet Master becomes a victim of his own weapons. So, yeah, I mean...
I don't think there's much we have to add.
Not really.
I was going to say, this supports my theory that Bob didn't actually do any research, because Puppet Master doesn't have his normal powers either. And next time he shows up, he's back to using puppets. And so I pretty much guarantee that Bob Powell had no fucking clue what Puppet Master was supposed to do.
Bob Powell sucks. The only thing I'll say is that Puppet Master tricked them to come down to a basement saying he was a sculptor, blah blah blah, and Finn Human Torch decided to go down without the girls to check it out first, and that so the girls ended up being protected, blah blah blah. But yeah, not much to add.
You know what, I actually kind of enjoy this one.
I gave this a 2. It almost got a 3 out of me just because of
it got the full wacky. 3, like it was super sexist.
Yeah,
but it's from the early 60s. So I expected it to be super sexist.
Oh, I guess Puppet Master also does have a mannequin that he uses to freeze Human Torch so he can't use his powers and all this stuff as he captures Finn that looks like a sex doll, so that could be worth
mentioning. Oh, yeah, I did make a joke about how it was going to blow someone when I was reading this.
Yeah, so that's something else, too, I guess. I don't know if that mannequin ever appears again, but...
It does not, because they destroyed it, but it did manage to cover... Ben with white liquid.
Yes, it very much did.
But yeah, no, this was actually by the low standard set by Torch Strange Tales, this was actually a pretty good story.
I wouldn't go that far, but it was fine. Like, it wasn't... I put it... It was. I technically enjoyed it a little more than the last one, but I put it on par with it in terms of star ratings, so...
I mean, the average rating is definitely more in your favor than in mine.
It was my favorite of the three Strange Tales, personally.
My favorite of the three is coming up next. I think it's substantially better than the last two.
I disagree. But I'll explain why I disagree when we get into it.
We'll get into that after I cover it. But anything else you want to say on that one?
Not really.
Fair enough.
If we're being honest, sorry for if we're being a little negative this week, but if you had to cover these comics, you'd understand.
I think we're being fair to them.
Yeah. Yeah, fair.
I mean, they're not good comics, but we're not just burying them. We are mentioning when they do good stuff.
That standard might not stick for the next one for me. So, speaking of, let's move on to Strange Tales number 134, A Story, which is titled The Challenge of the Watcher. He's back. Remember when we last saw Watcher, his own mini-stories were dying in the back of Tales of Suspense. Stan Lee wrote this one, Bob Howe art again. Woo. Wallace Wood on inks. Oh, what a team that is. Wallace Wood and Bob
Howe. It makes the art better.
It actually does somehow. Wallace Wood somehow made this
Wally
better.
Wally can fix Bob's terrible art better than Chick could.
Jack Kirby's on the cover. Artie Simic on letters. April 1965 release date. 12-page story. And this is the last Human Torch and Finn story in Strange Tales. And Bill will take it away
for
us.
You can tell it's the last one because they went for the Hail Mary of taking Doctor Strange off the cover.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure Stan's like... did that to try to prove that it wasn't Torch that was dragging this magazine down. It was Strange. Anyway, the Watcher appears before the Human Torch and Thing, asking the two for help. Uatu explains that Kang the Conqueror has traveled back in time to Camelot and bested Merlin in battle and took control over the kingdom in a bid to control that era. After spending a good 5 minutes telling them how he cannot interfere in any way, he proceeds to interfere. Sending the two heroes back in time, the Thing battles Kang's army of knights with advanced weapons. The knights have the advanced weapons, not Thing. That sentence kind of makes it unclear. While the Torch breaks into the castle and frees Merlin. With Merlin free, the two heroes easily crush Kang's army and force Kang to retreat to another era. In thanks, Uatu sends the two heroes back to their own time. That's the summary. And I don't think it missed that much.
I wouldn't be able to tell you, really, because the story struggled to hold my attention. I genuinely hated this one because it had heat for me from the start, because if you're going to throw Merlin a story, I'm already not interested. And then I also have a bias against Kane and never having found him that interesting either. So you're putting two fins together that I don't like, so I didn't really... I fucking hated this one.
I've got bad news for you about Black Knight. I personally hated this story because, as I've expressed in the past, I really don't like modern heroes time traveling stories.
I hated it here. I really genuinely hated that
they're
here.
Generally really bad at doing time travel to pre-industrial eras. Like, if they go back to World War I or something, it's usually fine. But anytime they're sent to something medieval or ancient, it's usually terrible. But that being said, the story was objectively better. The writing was better. They had a villain that actually could be a threat. Although I also hate Kang. He's not a villain I'm ever excited to see. But compared to what they've been throwing at us for the last 10 or so Strange Tales, he actually feels like a threat.
No, I mean, he is a bigger deal, technically. throwing him in with a story with Marilyn and all this other shit is where I had the issue.
Yeah, they went all out trying to make the trying to save Torch with this story. It was too little, too late. But as much as I didn't enjoy reading it, I think objectively it's a massive step up from the last few stories we've read with this character.
Yeah, well, I'm here to
take liberties. Were all this good, if they were all as good as this one, the book would probably have survived. Well, the book did survive, but I mean, Johnny Torch probably would have survived in it.
Yeah. The way you feel about going back to ancient Egypt and, like, Cleopatra times and all that shit is how I feel about going back to King Arthur times. I don't want to fucking read it.
Oh, I mean, I feel the same way about this. I dreaded this story both times I read it, which might be part of the reason I thought it was pretty good, but in this case, the ratings more align with my opinion of it than yours. Because it got a 2.6 average, and I gave it a 3.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you go bottom of the barrel on it, it's definitely leaning more your way.
Yeah. I'm glad. Now that we're past them, I'm glad the last few stories were so bad so that this book actually would die and we can get Nick Fury.
Yeah. Speaking of, let's go right into that then. Strange Tales number 135A story, titled The Man for the Job. Boy, is he ever. This one's written by Stan Lee, art by Jack Kirby, inks by Dick Ayers. That's how you know they're taking this seriously, too. We got a good art back. Jack Kirby's
on the
cover.
Yeah, well, when books start dying, they take the good artists, they take the good creative teams off them.
Yeah.
They were probably paying Bob Powell with a sandwich to draw those books.
That's all he deserved, to be honest.
I wouldn't even give him any jelly for that. He can just have some plain white bread.
Yeah. Plain white bread and butter. Letters by Sam Rosen. May 1965 release date. Wait, did that skip a month for this to come back? No, it didn't. No, it didn't.
Yeah, I was going to say it shouldn't, because there's no reason for them to stop printing Strange stories. Because
Strange was still going.
Yeah.
12-page story, and Bill will have the thrill and pleasure of taking this one.
Unfortunately, the synopsis for this isn't a whole lot longer than the last couple, but the story is much better.
Boy, is it ever.
Colonel Nick Fury reports to the Pentagon, where he is mysteriously cloned. Okay, someone wasn't reading. He is not mysteriously cloned. He is explicitly copied for life model decoys.
Which is interesting that the life model decoy concept appears right away.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised, although it does immediately bring up one of the recurring themes of a Nick Fury comic. Nick Fury dying and then, like, not actually being dead.
Yeah.
Something that continues into the MCU, where I think he's died, like, 3 times and not died. Full of questions, he is then escorted to the streets above, where the clones, life model decoys, have been positioned to protect Fury from hidden assassins. Shoved into a car, another attack is thwarted by various spy gadgets that the car is equipped with. He is told about S.H.I.E.L.D. and that the attacks have come from Hydra, where the agent responsible for the failed attacks on Fury is killed by Agent 8. Sure replaces him. Okay, that's several ideas jammed into one sentence, so I'm going to try to unpack that. Fury is given an overview on Hydra, because when this comic came out, they originally intended it just to be Fury fighting Hydra. Then we cut over to the Hydra base, where the agent that failed to assassinate Fury reports his failure and gets the traditional Hydra approach to failure, which I think they actually give up on fairly quickly. But originally, if you fail, you're pitted against the person that's going to replace you, and you have to fight to the death. And so he fights with Agent 8, who notably is the first female to ever get that position. And yes, I use female instead of woman on person on purpose, because this feels like it's written by an incel at times. Anyway, she easily bests him, partially because she's allowed to have a weapon and he is not. And nothing more comes of that now, but that will be important in the future. At SHIELD HQ, Fury is greeted by Tony Stank, who is in charge of the special weaponry section, and told that he has been chosen to lead SHIELD in their mission to destroy Hydra. At first, Fury is reluctant, but after uncovering a bomb that had been rigged to blow him and the high-ranking officials up, he quickly takes control and agrees to lead SHIELD, and that's the end. They gloss over the fact that he's on a fucking helicarrier, because that's another thing that debuts in this comic, in one of the best reveal splash panels I've ever seen.
Oh, I think it's the best so far in the order to where we are in terms of covering on the podcast here.
It might be. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and check, but it's possible one of Ditko's early Spider-Man might rival it. It's definitely the best Kirby splash page we've gotten so far.
Yes, with that we can easily say that, I think. Because Ditko might have something to rival that we're forgetting at the moment.
Yeah, I don't retain our long-term, although this is one of the ones that... Oh, I know one splash page I like better that's actually not Ditko. It's Wally Wood.
Oh, that's true.
The page when Daredevil has snuck into an office to confront a villain, and the guy walks into the office and we get a full-page panel of Daredevil at the desk with his feet up on the desk in, like, really atmospheric shadows. I think that one's better, but there's not a lot that rival this one at this point.
No. This, that was a beautiful shot. One of the best art pieces so far. It's a fantastic story and a very essential one. Debuting S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra in one go, and Nick Fury also taking up being an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. all jammed into 12 pages, and it's done beautifully.
I think the only thing that kept it from being a 5 for me was that it was only 12 pages.
Genuinely a really good comic for the time period it's being produced in.
Oh, yeah.
And if we could give half stars, I probably would have gotten a 4.5 out of me, but I ended up giving it a 4.
So you liked this a little more than I did, because for me, this was a comfortable 4, but no higher, because, like, half of the comic was exposition. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, the comic form is not the best for long exposition.
Fair enough.
I mean, that exposition was essential, and I'm glad they did it, because I didn't... This is not a case where I'd want a slow burn where they take 10 issues to teach me that stuff. I'm glad they dumped it all in the first one.
Yeah, no, I just kind of accept that as necessary to the what they're
going
for.
It was necessary, but you're not getting above 4 stars doing it.
That's fair enough. This was never... Between the exposition and not going a little longer and just a few little, small little fins, this was not going to get 5 stars, but between 4 and 4.5, this was genuinely a really good comic for the time period it's coming out in. So.
Oh, yeah, this is about as good as they could do without something being absolutely must-read.
So far, and we still have like 3 more weeks of the month, and we had last week's comics that will be included in the end of the month stuff, but so far, this is my comic of the month.
Oh, it's not close at this point. I don't know what we've got coming up, but it's not close right now. This is the best comic we've read.
Oh, yeah.
Probably in 3 months.
Possibly, yeah. No, this was
like,
genuinely really good.
Going back to the first 10 Spider-Man are the only other comics I can think of that come close to this one.
No, this is how you should start a comic run. Like, this is a great way to start a run, too.
Yeah, this makes you want to read the next story.
Yeah, and then it gets broken up, and we don't read the next ones for a little bit, but oh well.
Yeah, we got to start catching up on Doctor Strange now.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Do we bother to tell them what S.H.I.E.L.D. stands for at this point or anything, or does that even matter, really?
It does not matter. Not because it's a bad acronym, although it kind of is a chunky acronym. There's plenty of those in real life, so it's not unrealistic.
Yeah.
But just because it doesn't matter, they never spell it out again, pretty much. It's just S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
So we might as well just leave it at S.H.I.E.L.D. If people want to know, they can go read this comic, and should themselves.
Yeah, no, this is... you should read this one yourselves. It's an essential for... If you were doing something like this, it's definitely an essential one.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm also saying it because it's good, because as you'll find out as you read more of these, essential doesn't mean good.
Oh, no, it does not at all.
But, I've read some bad comics that are essential because they have something important in them.
Oh, shit. Well, I guess we should move on to Tales of Suspense number 65. Certainly not an essential comic. First, we'll cover the A story, of course, which is titled When Titans Clash. We got Stan Lee writing this one, Don Heck on the art, Mike Esposito on inks, cover arts by Jack Kirby, Sam Rosen is on letters. This is a February 1965 release date, 12-page story, and I will take us away for this one.
The synopsis... Since we've been focusing on the art so much, I want to mention that I actually really like the Heck Esposito team.
Oh yeah, it's pretty good. This synopsis is a few paragraphs jammed into no spaces, so let's see if that messes me up at all. The story begins with Tony Stark in his offices, musing to himself about the impossibility of marrying Pepper Potts and the rightful happiness of his friend Happy Hogan as he informs them of his taking leave to demonstrate the company's new missile system at an out-of-town military test site. While away showing off the new Mangler missile capabilities, the Flushing, New York plant site finds its security breached by a brazen common burglar who goes by the name of Weasel Wills. In the process of rifling the after-hours offices, he finds the left-behind attaché case of Tony Stark containing the latest Iron Man armor, which is pretty irresponsible of Tony to just leave sitting around, by the way.
Tony was thinking with the wrong brain.
Yeah. The burglar.
That's not me making a joke for anyone who thinks hasn't read this, because the comic or the synopsis isn't super clear on this. That's actually explicitly the reason why Tony left that case behind.
Oh, definitely. The burglar discovers its contents immediately and their value, and dons the armor himself, whereby he walks out of the plant concealed in the armor and raising an area notice from the security guards. Out and away from the plant, the criminal Wills learns about the functions of the armor and then sets... Well, he also practices a lot. And then sets to using out and away... Using them in a crime spree, robbing banks and loot while securing himself in a... Jesus Christ, this is all jammed together. Himself in a way in a lair that the armor has allowed him to burrow on the ground. The audacity of the crimes and the figure involved as being the hero Iron Man stirs up fast attention in the press and by the authorities such that it reaches the notice of Tony Stark, who is away on his trip. Realizing the source of his new menace in his own armor mislaid and pilfered, he speeds back to New York and dons his remaining Iron Man armor before he created the current red and yellow version. So he goes back to his gold version, which was also his silver version. So Mark 2, I believe it would be.
Yeah, the Mark 1 was the silver one. Oh, no, we're still on Mark 2.
No, we're on Mark 4 already or something.
Yeah, they might have gotten a couple marks there when they did this, but it's kind of cool. No, it is the Model 2.
Oh, they call it Model 2.
I thought it had to be because he only had the one.
Yeah, because Model 1 was the same model between silver and gold. He just painted it.
Yeah, I don't think Model 4 comes out for a while.
They confused the
Although
armors a lot on this site.
We're close to the end of Model 2, I think.
Anyways, determined but unaware of the actual identity of the armor's user, the plan that Tony Stark sets to lure him out is to tap into the radio frequency of the Iron Man armors and transmit a threat and challenge the thief to meet in a deserted plant at night. By the way, since Wills found the armor, he does know that Tony is Iron Man. He's pieced that together, so he's like the first person to piece that together, I think.
Yeah, he is the first person to realize Tony is Iron Man.
Which is really thrown away in the...
I'll say this. They handle it better than I expected them to.
No, I mean, it's logical, but it's just kind of wasted.
I thought he was just going to die in some sort of mishap, and that's how Tony's secret would be safe.
I was expecting that, too, to be honest. Confident and curious as to what means might be used against him in the future, the thief in armor gets the drop on the waiting Tony Stark, pacing out pacing about in his old bulky yellow armor. Which, by the way, Tony makes a big deal of having to use that old armor because he created the new armor because he needed something that didn't strain his heart as much and was lighter and blah, blah, blah. So he's worried using the old armor. And it does come into effect later on. Despite the speed and greater power of the new yellow and red armor, the fight between the two armors that ensues turns on Tony Stark's knowledge, experience, and ultimately a ploy to exhaust the power supply of the armor.
Okay, that's actually a bit of a mistake that they made there. The red and gold version is not more powerful. It's faster, but the gold version is stronger.
Yeah.
That's the whole dynamic of the fight.
Yeah, true. Having cut all power access in the plant, Stark gambles that he could goad on an attack that will leave his opponent drained while he conserves his. In victory, Tony Stark is resigned that the police who are rushing to the scene will learn of his secret identity as Iron Man from the criminal. But upon question, there's like no commas in this at all either. But upon question,
yeah, no, about I looked at it. It's really bad.
But upon question about how Wills got the armor, Wills undermines all of his credibility with claim that he made himself when he is known as being nothing more than a petty thief. So basically there, Wills just loses his fucking mind and actually thinks he's Iron Man is how it is put in the story.
Yeah, just decided he was... I don't think he's actually gone insane. He just decided he was actually Iron Man once he was using it for a while. He's like, no, fuck you, I'm Iron Man.
I am Iron Man. So the story ends...
Because when Tony first confronts him and, like, identifies himself as actually Iron Man, he's just like, no, you're not. I'm Iron Man.
Yeah.
He just decided that he's Iron Man now.
It's my armor now. You shouldn't have left it sitting about. I'm Iron Man.
The story... And, you know, I think he has an argument.
Yeah, finders keepers, you know. The story ends with the secret of Iron Man secure, and friends and authority relieved that the real Iron Man hasn't turned bad. Finders keepers.
You know, well, I mean, Tony didn't come back for a fucking month.
Oh, fucking.
But, you know what? If I was one of the cops, I think I'd probably believe Willis. He's got the new armor. And you got one guy who's no one ever has ever seen before in that armor claiming to be Iron Man. And one guy in old armor that hasn't been seen in ages claiming to be Iron Man. Why the fuck do they believe the guy in the old armor? It's not like Tony has anything that can prove his claims.
I can't believe Weasel Wills has been forgotten the time as Iron Man.
Yeah, he never shows up again. They don't ever do anything interesting with the fact that someone who knew Tony's identity survived.
Yeah, well, Marvel, give me the pen. I have a story to write. No.
Do not give them the pen.
just like give me the pen on, give me the pen and let me go with a Human Torch story. We're bringing Doris Evans back, baby. No.
See, I wish they had done more with Doris.
Yeah. There's so much left on the table.
The original dynamic with Doris, where she loved Johnny but hated that he was a superhero, was really good, and they fucking did nothing with it.
Yeah, no. Oh, fuck. Well, this one squeezed away with a 3. It was good enough.
Yeah, this was a perfectly acceptable filler issue.
Although technically a weaker issue of Iron Man, I would say.
I'd say it's about average for what Iron Man's doing right now. Iron Man hasn't been consistently good.
No, it dropped. It started on a little bit of a run and then dropped off.
It'll have
fast.
Like a good issue or two, and then it'll have a bad issue or two, and then it'll have a good issue again. Like, it got good when they killed Tony for a bit, and then immediately dropped that again.
Also, I will say, I think this is the first issue where Happy's look is wildly changed to being more of a normal-looking guy.
Yeah, they made him handsome, and I'm not happy about that.
Yeah, no, they made him handsome in this and just didn't acknowledge it at all.
Because the whole gimmick with Happy was that he was kind of ugly.
Yeah, so I don't like that.
And he, like, perpetually looked grumpy. That's why they called him Happy. It was a joke. And now he's just, like, a normal, fairly happy-looking guy.
Yeah, so now they've changed both Pepper and Happy's looks. Pepper's is less offensive. I think Happy's change is worse.
Yeah, the change to Pepper's look is inoffensive. My problem with it is that it marks a pretty pronounced change in her personality.
Yeah.
Because Happy's personality isn't really established. I mean, they told us a bunch of personality traits when he got hired. And then he demonstrated none of those. And he's just there for a while to be another guy that Tony knows. But, like, he hasn't got a consistent personality yet.
Fair.
Other than pining after Pepper, that's been established. Because they want to do the love triangle thing.
Yeah. Well, I don't have much more to say about that one, I don't think. So should we move on to the B story?
All right.
Our so-called main event. Which is titled, The Red Skull Strikes.
No, he doesn't.
he doesn't, really. As Stan Lee writes this one, he certainly does. Art by Jack Kirby, inks by Chick Stone. They're giving Chick a credit on the cover. Sam Rosen on letters, February 1965 release date, and this is a 10-page story, and Bill will have the pleasure of taking this one.
All right. One day, Steve Rogers and Bucky Barnes have dropped off Major Croy, an important officer in the U.S. Army, who sends them back to base even after words of caution from Steve. If you're confused, remember this is back during the flashback when we were telling World War II stories with Captain America. That night, Croy is attacked by the Red Skull, who uses a special gas on him that will make him lose his memory for months. Investigating the scene of the crime, Rogers and Barnes leave the scene, change into Captain America and Bucky, and begin tracking the Major's attacker. Bucky finds himself captured and taken to the Red Skull. However, Cap manages to track them down and fight them off until they retreat. The next morning, back in his civilian guise, that sounds weird when he's in the military because it's not really a civilian guise, Steve witnesses the arrival of General Curtis with Mr. Maxon of the Maxim Airplane Corporation to view the test flight of a new plane. When the plane suddenly crashes, Maxon only cares about the plane, not the pilot's lives that were lost in the crash, which arouses Roger's suspicion of him. Oh my God, a capitalist worried more about profit than people. How suspicious. Oh wait, this is during the McCarthy era. We can't think like that. Figuring that Curtis is next on the Red Skull's list, Captain America and Bucky go to Curtis's home to find the Red Skull there trying to knock out the housekeeper. Fighting the Skull, they manage to unmask him and reveal him to be Maxon. Maxon manages to escape, but leaves his hit list behind, revealing that Captain America and Bucky were next on his list. That's it, although I want to make a couple points before we move on. This is a reprint from a story from Captain America Comics 1. However, in the original one, he was poisoning people with a hypodermic needle while making them think they were being hypnotized to die by his staring into his eyes. So kind of Ghost Rider thing. But that had to be changed because of the comic code, where they can't have people being poisoned with hypodermics. I don't think they can show anyone even getting a hypodermic. That's why they had to change the super soldier formula to a pill for Steve. And in this one, Maxon escapes, whereas in the original version, he commits suicide with his own poisoned needle. And he was never actually the Red Skull. The wiki actually makes a mistake by claiming he was originally intended to be the Red Skull. But that's wrong, because I've actually read this comic in the original version, and he dies in it and is also unmasked as Maxon. And then the Red Skull shows up like 3 issues later, and it's always explicitly stated to be a different person.
Hmm. Yeah, I was actually enjoying this one until the Red Skull stuff, like, near the end. I'd fuck that.
Yeah, I knew it was coming. The main reason I didn't like this one is the story was originally 18 pages long, and they compressed it down to 10, which took an awful lot of stuff that made it make sense out of it.
The story made sense at one point?
Yeah, the 18-page story is actually not bad. I mean, it's dated as all hell because it was printed in 41, but it's really not a bad story.
Hmm. Interesting.
It's probably the second best story in that Captain America comics after his origin.
So yeah, I ended up giving this one a 2.
I can't really hold the reveal that it wasn't actually the Red Skull against them, because I knew that was coming. If you're retelling stories from the 40s.
Fair enough.
So yeah, I gave this one a 2 myself.
I also gave it a 2 because it did not get served well by being compressed to half the length.
It's actually got a relatively good average score on the site.
Yeah, I think a lot of people didn't read the earlier version of the story because it's not a
crazy like you.
It's not it's not a bad story. It's just not as good as the original telling of it, and so I docked the star for it not being as good.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
but like if this was my first exposure, I think I would have given it a 3.
Yeah, like I said, my main issue was the Red Skull stuff. That was lame, so...
I would have been a three before that. I hate that concept, and there's a reason they never mention Maxim again almost as the Red Skull. It might be mentioned one or two more times right around this point. And then they forget that the Red Skull ever had impersonators working for him.
So that was our week of comics. You can see why we were shitting on them at the start. I mean, it could have been worse, to be fair, but relatively shitty week.
Yeah, it was definitely one of our weaker weeks.
So, I mean, on that note, let's talk about what's coming next week, which should be quite a bit better, I would think.
We got an arc I really like next week.
Well, that's good. We've got a few X-Men issues in a row here, as we're going to get issues 11, 12, and 13 of X-Men, which we have The Triumph of Magneto, The Origin of Professor X, and Where Walks the Juggernaut. So
12 and 13 are fantastic comics.
Yeah, I assumed that's what you meant when you were talking about the arc.
Yeah, well, I didn't really like 11 that much. I'm well below the site average on it, but 12 and 13 are phenomenal comics.
Yeah, we're getting Juggernaut action, so that's great.
Oh, and then we get a really important Thor.
Yes. Journey into Mystery Annual number 1, When Titans Clash, which we'll see Thor versus fucking Hercules, Bill's boy.
That's right, we get the introduction to the real Hercules here. Let's go. That's a different company.
And then to end the week off, we're only doing 5 entries next week since the... I don't know. I just felt like it was more appropriate. But Fantastic Four number 38, which is where the Fantastic Four fight the Frightful Four again. Yeah, the Thor annual is apparently short, which I remember looking at the time, but everything else is long, full
the
length.
The Thor annual, remember this is back during Journey into Mystery era, and so most of it is retellings and... yeah, it's reprints, but
yeah.
The new story is really, really good.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I really like that Fantastic Four, too.
Should be a very solid week.
I think we're going from one of our worst weeks to one of our best.
Yeah, this might give Fury some contenders, possibly, so we'll find out next week, though.
Yeah. Actually, just noticing the two that are poking on, we got a pretty good week following that, too.
Yeah, we're entering a pretty strong stretch, I think. So, I also broke it up for the 5 because we get an Defenders arc after that, and I didn't really want to jump into the middle
of
that,
too. Not going to cliffhang them for a week on who the new Avengers are going to be?
Yeah. I guess not. I didn't even realize that actually, if that would be a good 16, thing to cliffhang on.
16 is the reveal of the new Avengers roster.
Maybe we should break it up like that, then.
No, these are long comics, and we're going to have a lot to talk about.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking going into it. Yeah, because I think, like, this is a behind-the-scenes thing, but I might as well say it publicly. We're going to have to largely ignore story arcs for when we start breaking comics, because we're getting into longer-form storytelling now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's just kind of how many can we cover in an episode reasonably at that point.
Yeah, I know of at least one time where our episode is probably going to be literally one comic.
Well then.
Because it's like a 100-page comic.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, it's bad, too. It's Captain America Teaches America's Bicentennial History.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
It's like a 100-page comic of Captain America traveling through time, and it is not a pleasant read.
Oh, God. Well,
The good news for anyone frightened by that is it's like 10 years away, so like 50 years in our podcast time.
Oh, shit. I guess on that note, we'll get out of here and leave this shitty week of comics behind us. Episode 51 will be, we'll hopefully rest in peace. If you're watching this on YouTube, please leave a like, subscribe, comment, and even share if you'd like to. We are also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you're on Spotify, click that poll, let us know what your favorite comic we covered was, and let us know how you love the new look for the Puppet Master. But
I was going to say, let us know why Weasel Willis is your Iron Man.
That works too. I had a different one yesterday, but I forget what it was now. But anyway, guys, we will see you all in the next episode of the podcast, and hopefully you stick around too and come watch our TEW stream that's probably going to happen. And we will see you all next time, and peace out.
Have a good one, everyone.